read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, verse 17. Tasya evam vartamanasya purvesham vrittim anvaham anati dure kilascharyam yadasi tantanabodhame. Translation. Now you may hear from me what happened while Maharaj Parikshit was passing his days, hearing of the good occupation of his forefathers and being absorbed in thought of them. Text 18. The personality of religious principles, Dharma, was wandering about in the form of a bull, and he met the personality of earth in the form of a cow, who appeared to grieve like a mother who had lost her child. She had tears in her eyes, and the beauty of her body was lost. Thus, Dharma questioned the earth as follows. Purport, the bull is the emblem of moral principle, and the cow is the representative of the earth. When the bull and the cow are in a joyous mood, it is to be understood that the people of the world are also in a joyful mood. The reason is that the bull helps production of grains in the agricultural field, and the cow delivers milk, the miracle of aggregate food values. The human society, therefore, maintains these two important animals very carefully so that they can wander everywhere in cheerfulness. But at the present moment in this age of Kali, both the bull and the cow are now being slaughtered and eaten up as foodstuff by a class of men who do not know the Brahminical culture. The bull and the cow can be protected for the good of all human society simply by the spreading of Brahminical culture, the topmost perfection of all cultural affairs. By advancement of such culture, the morale of society is properly maintained, and so peace and prosperity are also attained without extraneous effort. When Brahminical culture deteriorates, the cow and bull are mistreated, and the resultant actions are prominent in the following symptoms. Translation, the personality of religious principles, Dharma, was wandering about in the form of a bull, and he met the personality of earth in the form of a cow, who appeared to grieve like a mother who had lost her child. She had tears in her eyes, and the beauty of her body was lost. Thus, Dharma questioned the earth as follows. Here begins a very interesting and prophetic description of the condition of earth in this age, Kali Yuga. What is interesting is not just the prediction about what happens to the earth, but also the cause of the present condition of the earth. So this, of course, in the modern age, we can analyze the various causes through science and whatnot, and people can come to some sort of conclusion about what is going wrong and what is the cause, etc. And, of course, it is these things are causes in one sense. But usually one cause has another cause and another cause and another cause. So if we don't root out the root, don't find the root cause, we're never going to solve our problem. So it is just like a disease. You can find the immediate cause of the disease, like a heart disease is some plugging of your valve by cholesterol or something like that. So get rid of the cholesterol by doing a stent or something in your blood, or taking an operation, getting a bypass. So that's okay, you solve the immediate problem. But then what caused that in the first place? What caused the blood vessels to get clogged up? So then we should get another cause beyond that. And of course, doctors also know that. One is stress, one is diet, So these two things, if you control the diet and you control your stress, then you get rid of the cause of getting the clogged heart arteries or whatever, and then you can solve your problem that way. So, in other words, we have to go try to find the original cause of why we're suffering on earth. Of course, if we take a very philosophical stance and we could say all suffering is caused because we're all on Krishna conscious, we're all Bahirmukha and trying to enjoy in the material world, and therefore we have to suffer here. And this is the nature of the material world, to suffer because we have material bodies, and if we have karma due to our desire for material enjoyment, then this is the result. So that also correct. It's a correct way of looking at things as well. And of course, those devotees understand this very well. It's a very basic principle that material suffering is there because of our bad karma, because of our desires, because of our ignorance, our rejection of the Lord. Very simple solution. So this is what we call sambandha gyan, which we learn in the very beginning of bhakti. So right from the beginning of our devotional service, we learn what is the whole root cause of all the suffering in the material world. And if we look at any situation in the world, we can give the same answer, because this is the root cause of all the sufferings in the material world. Of course, that won't satisfy many people, because it's like a theoretical, unproven by modern standards, not philosophical answer. But ultimately, for the human being, we do have to look at our total condition, our social condition, environmental condition, etc., psychological condition, health condition, etc. But then we have to also look at our spiritual condition as an essential part of that, analyzing everything. And if we don't do that, something is missing from all of these analyses. So, when the Bhagavatam talks about our problems in the material world, again, it comes back to the very simple solution is we have to realize the Supreme Lord. So the sages of Naimisharanya were asking, what's going to happen now, because Krishna has disappeared and he's taken Dharma with him. So naturally the earth is going to be completely corrupted and full of problems. What are we going to do? So the answer is, Srimad Bhagavatam has risen like the sun in Kali Yuga to enlighten people. So the answer is spiritual knowledge. So directly we can say that the contribution of the devotee to all the problems in the world is spiritual knowledge. We know that also. And for that reason, Srila Prabhupada would often criticize spiritual organizations that open up hospitals and schools and humanitarian activities. Not that we criticize helping people, because we're also compassionate. That's not the thing. So we should not be indifferent to people's suffering. But the reason he was criticizing the spiritual organizations for doing this is that ultimately we do have to realize that the whole problem is a problem of lack of spiritual life. And we have to do that. So therefore, the purpose of a devotee is to tell people that the solution is spiritual knowledge, spiritual sadhana, etc. And this will bring about a solution to all the problems we have in the material world. So that's basically why we encourage this distribution of books and spiritual books like Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. That's the ultimate duty for the devotee. Still, people will say, well, you're very indifferent to society or whatever like that. Look at all these other organizations. Look at all the other religions. They're helping people out very nicely. And even in India, the same takes place. And unless we do some philanthropic activity, then people criticize, oh, you're just meditating or chanting or whatever. Look at the people suffering in the street and people starving and people getting sick, and now we have coronavirus, etc. What are you doing to help the people like that? So they want some practical action also in this world, not just meditate and whatever like that. So, of course, as I said, the principle of Bhagavatam is, yes, you ultimately have to bring about a spiritual solution. All the material solutions will not be solve the problem. So that's the truth. But, of course, People were going to criticize that as being a little bit, idealistic, and everyone, people are suffering. You just sit there and chant Hare Krishna while everybody suffers and dies. That doesn't look proper. Therefore, we also have to think of the immediate situation in this world and do something about it. Here we see this analysis is going to be given of the situation of the world, which is represented by the cow. That's a very good example, and of course it comes up later in the story about Prithu as well, the example of the cow being the earth. Yeah? So why is the cow selected as the symbol of the earth? It's because the earth is like a cow, and the cow gives milk, so the earth gives food. We get our sustenance from the earth, and the calf gets its sustenance from the milk of the cow. So the earth is the producer, or like the mother, so to speak. So it's a very good example. We can say a symbolic example. It's not also purely symbolic. It's also actual. In one sense, because symbols in the Vedic literature are not simply literary figures of speech or whatever. They can also be interpreted literally, and they're also true, because spiritual things are not subject to our material limited vision, etc. So one thing can also be something else. So in that sense, the earth can also be the cow. The cow can be the earth. And we have the example of devatas. So we have a devata of the earth, Bhudevi, the earth devata. And she protects the earth and manages the whole earth. And actually, this is an expansion from Lakshmi, and from Radha, ultimately. The spiritual deity, as I explained last night, Vishnu has these two shaktis, Lakshmi and Bhu. Bhu is earth. So in the spiritual world, that represents the Dham also, the spiritual Dham. But then we have expansion here in the material world, Bhu Devi also. And we see that Bhu Devi also is the consort of the Lord. When Varaha lifted the Bhu Mandala out of the Garbhadaka ocean and raised it up again properly, we often have depictions of Bhu Devi as the consort of Varaha, Lakshmi, a form of Lakshmi. So in other words, and we're not going to say Lakshmi is an illusion. She can't be an illusion or a figure of speech. She's an actual person. So therefore, the symbol of the earth is often like Lakshmi, or expansion of Lakshmi, and also the cow. Of course, not a gross material cow with a limited body, etc. Something that was like Devata. And Devata also can change their form and have many different forms. Also, so therefore, we should not just take it as a literary example, but also understand that it has some truth in it as being factual as well. So, anyway, the earth is like the cow and gives food and other things for the living entities, including the human being. Yeah. And of course, the cow likes to do this. Cow likes to give milk. Likes to feed the calf. It's nature to do so, like a mother wants to feed the child and protect the child. So the earth likes to do this for all the living entities on earth. Natural. But we see that the cow is not independent. So the cow has the bull as a husband. So this is where because it gets a little complicated, which science does not know about or doesn't care to recognize. Yes, the scientists recognize the earth is, productive, and it's very sensitive, and if we disturb it in one place, the earth, and it gives a reaction in another place like this, and we destroy the little bit of the atmosphere in one place, and it has the big effect somewhere else, and we start getting weather changes and whatever like this, or People understand that to some degree, that we can't tinker with nature too much. Of course, we have that all the time in terms of animals. They introduce a new animal into Australia, and then it overtakes everything, and it causes a big problem or something like that. Or you put a new plant there, and then it becomes a big weed, and you got to just start destroying it later on. So you understand that nature is very delicately balanced, and if we start tampering with it, then big problems are going to happen. So that's understood. Which is why also genetic engineering is a big problem, because if we start tinkering on a very subtle level with animals and plants and whatever, then we could end up with huge problems in the future. So we have to be very careful of that. Some scientists do recognize the sensitivity of the earth and nature, etc., the balance that is there. We can't interfere with that too much. What they don't recognize is the other factor here. It's not just the cow, and the cow is very sensitive, etc., but there's the bull. And here, the bull is Dharma. So Dharma means, I'm going to say, religious principles, but of course we don't want to use that term religious principles in a sectarian way. So we can more easily appropriately define Dharma as rules of conduct that are in harmony with the earth, to protect the earth. And where do we get those rules of conduct for? So these are mainly rules for the human being, not for the animals. So the happiness of the earth and production of the earth depends upon the conduct of the human being, not upon the conduct of the cats and the dogs and whatever, on the human being. So we have rules for the human being. So a dispute will come on what rules. We can have our own human rules that we can make up as we go along. Some of them are good, some of them maybe not so good. Better to take the traditional rules. And some of these traditional rules we even find in what we call primitive societies. They have rules of conduct of how to interact with nature, etc. Carried down tradition from their forefathers, because they understand if you do something wrong, the earth reacts and you get a bad reaction. So they have all these rules on how to treat the animals and the plants and the water, etc. For us, then, the more sophisticated way of doing this is to go to the scriptures, and there we find what are the rules of Dharma, what are the conduct of the human being. So we have tons of scriptures dedicated to defining how the human being should act. So we have all these smritis, Manusmriti, Yajnavalkya smriti, and Harita smriti, and Sankha smriti, etc., Vishnu smriti, all defining how the human being should act in relation to each other and in relation to the rest of the earth and the animals and the plants, etc. So, in other words, the earth will not be stable unless the human being conducts themselves properly according to the laws of Dharma. And the most sophisticated laws of Dharma we'll find in the Vedic scriptures. So therefore that means that there's a relationship between the human being and his moral conduct and the condition of the earth. It's not just the condition of the human being, it means the whole condition of the earth for everything, life on earth itself, is quite dependent upon how human beings act. So it's quite an interesting type of realization or fact that is presented in the Bhagavatam. From this we can see how the scriptures analyze and emphasize the importance of human conduct in relation to the not only human survival, but survival of the earth. Human conduct is very, very important. Therefore, we do have a emphasis upon this, the principles of Dharma for the human being. So here in this section, we have Dharma and the earth. And the earth is here grieving, like a mother who has lost her child. And then Dharma begins to question the earth, and the earth begins to answer in different ways why she's grieving. So, and then later on we see what happens to Dharma. Kali Yuga comes along, and he begins to attack Dharma. Until there's one leg of Dharma left, he's can't even stand up anymore. Dharma cannot even stand up. And Dharma's on one leg, and there's the cow crying. So then we can never expect that the earth or the cow is going to give proper food or proper milk because of the condition of the Dharma. We find the scriptures give an intimate relationship between the human being and the earth, which is quite profound. We probably don't find this in other religious scriptures, but we'll find this very directly stated here. Human being Dharma plus condition of the earth. So, if Dharma is maintained properly, then the earth produces nicely. What this ultimately means is the human beings have to control their senses to some minimum standard. And then the earth will go on nicely, and there'll be enough food for everybody, the weather will be nice, and everyone can live a prosperous life. But unless we follow those laws of Dharma, that's not going to happen. So that's basically what is stated here. So the only question is, well, what is the minimum standard we have to follow? Because everybody's a little bit reluctant to follow too many rules. It's what's the minimum we can get away with and establish our prosperity? And unfortunately, we find in the Dharma Shastras, like Manusmriti, there's too many rules. It's too complicated for most people, and it's probably shocking for the people in the modern world to have so many rules to follow. Everybody is so limited in what they can do. You're limited in who you can marry, you're limited in who you interact with and who you talk to and everything like that, according to Varnas, etc. So there's, I say, too many rules to follow. That's true. And Kali Yuga is very difficult for people to follow all the rules. One concession that the Smritis give is that, if people are sudras, they have less rules to follow. If you're a brahmana, then you have more rules to follow. So most people in Kali Yuga are sudras, so they're a little compensation there. They can follow the minimum rules of the sudra, etc. But even the sudra has to follow rules, some basic rules of cleanliness and good conduct and honesty and compassion and things like that. So there are some basic rules for even the suitor to follow. We do have to try to figure out for our own good, as for the welfare of not only humans but the whole earth, what is the minimum standards at least that everybody should follow to continue a life on earth. As I said, maybe a little bit difficult to follow all these rules of Dharma, etc. But at least let us take some basic principles. Very nicely then, in this whole section, then we do have a solution to that. At least you follow four regulative principles. That's what this final solution. You're going to follow all these rules for Brahmas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, and interactions, and ashramas, etc. But at least four regulative principles, you follow that at least. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. Follow those. And on the other one is hoarding of money, excessive interaction in banks and things like this, financial manipulations of money. So if we follow the basic principles, then we can be assured that the earth can go on nicely and happily and give her products, and Dharma can be maintained at some level, so that the earth will respond nicely. So that is the solution that is given here in the Bhagavatam. Not too complicated, not too difficult to follow. Also, if people understand their responsibility in this world, and also the consequences of irresponsibility of the human being in relation to the whole earth. So therefore, very, very good section here is dedicated to explaining the position on earth at the present moment and the ultimate cause of that, that is the disruption of Dharma. Dharma, of course, is not the highest principle, and just following some rules to regulate our senses, that's not the highest principle. But it is important just to maintain the equilibrium of the earth. We do have that. But it's also very difficult for people to follow even the basic minimum standards of Dharma, like four regulative principles. It's very, very difficult for people to follow even that. So what is the solution? Along with that, then we have to have the bhakti. If we have the bhakti, then it becomes easier to follow these principles. Why? Because if we follow the process of bhakti, and we accept the position of the Supreme Lord and the position of the jiva, and we cultivate that relationship, then naturally these principles, the four regular principles, will manifest, because we understand through bhakti that we are not the controller, we are only the servant, we're not the material body, we are a jiva, and therefore we can minimize our material needs and our material sense gratification, develop that sense of austerity, sense control, sense of humility, lack of possessiveness, and a desire to understand the true nature of our existence on earth, which is not material at all. So if we have a spiritual practice that can give us this relationship with the Lord, then we can follow these principles of Dharma nicely. So therefore, we can say that here we have the earth and the relationship with Dharma, and with the Dharma, then we also have this process of bhakti. Then we can come to a solution for the problems on this earth. So that's the example given here. Okay, any question? Doesn't look so sinful in the sense of killing an animal or whatever like that. That's true. Or like illicit sex and how the problems we get through that. Of course, we do see that in any civilization, somehow gambling also takes hold, and it becomes a big problem for many people. And you'll see, probably if you go on television, you'll see all the ads about people gambling and losing all their money and whatever, so don't do this or whatever like that. It does create a problem in many societies, including Australia, I think. People get addicted to this, and then whatever they spend, they just spend on that, and then they leave their families and, you know, destitute, and they have no money for themselves or whatever. So it looks quite innocent, but it is a problem, and then that will lead to other problems as well. Because of that, then you don't take care of your family, you may get involved in intoxications, whatever. So it's just it's another type of addiction like that. Of course, we can expand that and say not just gambling as we know, throwing dice and playing cards, but all sorts of addictive activities, which we can say are prevalent in modern society, where everyone's on their cell phones doing all sorts of things, like, which is an addiction also. So it goes beyond just the regular gambling, which is, you know, throwing dice, etc.
It could also be like dealing in like the black market, like selling drugs and things like that too.
Well, that's more intoxication there. So that's got to be, but they're all related to each other. So the idea is all of these things, and then the personification of Kali was banned from, Pariksit's kingdom. He said, well, you've got to give me some place to stay. So then Pariksit Maharaj said, well, where there is hoarding of money, holding of gold. And because the answer why that is that where there's hoarding of gold, then you get all the other bad things happening. Illicit sex and prostitution and meat eating and gambling and all these things take place where you got a lot of money, you know, people hoarding their money.
I guess that makes sense, because in America, like, the most sinful place is like Las Vegas.
Where you get all the sins naturally arise along with the gambling. It's just simply a matter of who does what duty. So the government actually is responsible for the taking care of the citizens and making sure they're healthy and they don't suffer, etc. So it's not the duty of the brahmana in the society to do that. He's the one that's supposed to get the spiritual knowledge. So that's why Prabhupada here says the brahmana should be doing his activity here. So that means that we should be doing the spiritual knowledge. It doesn't mean that we don't consider the other things important, but it's just not our particular duty. It's up to the kshatriya to actually protect the citizens and make sure they're healthy, etc. There's a story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He says like this, but then the other side is that his disciples were describing that he actually was very compassionate, and he couldn't see other living entities suffer. And if somebody was beating the donkey, you know, when he's carrying his load, then he would feel very, very sad. Or when he heard descriptions, there was a plague that was happening in Tripura, I think, and he was serving the king then. And then someone was describing how the people were dying, and then he got so affected that he almost got sick himself. And then they thought he had the plague also. But he didn't actually, but he was just affected by the descriptions of the people suffering, you know. So it wasn't that he had no compassion for anyone, but his idea was that, you know, we have to have the final solution.
Just back on the gambling issue, sometimes we hear it as mental speculation in gambling. Is that another aspect of gambling?
Oh, well, we can say it's an extension of it. It may be in some cases where people get addicted to speculating, probably. in that case, I suppose. Otherwise, we can just say it is rather atheistic rather than gambling as such. We can say a very subtle form of sense gratification. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so I haven't seen it mentioned like that, but of course it's obviously a problem if we get obsessed with mental speculation and we don't go by scripture at all, then we're stuck. Or if we interpret the scriptures in a very speculative way, then this is also, we say, offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do have examples of miraculous things that happened, like the churning of the thighs. So somehow from the cells of his body, we can say they manufactured a child who was Prithu, who was actually incarnation of God, a special case. But that was done by the Brahmins, actually. So it was a kind of exceptional case. But in general, we can't really go against the laws of material nature and start tinkering with the way things are done without getting some serious consequences. If we're very intelligent, of course, we can probably do something. But on the other hand, even no matter how intelligent we are as human beings, there's always some fault there. So that's why we have to be careful when we start tinkering with nature and doing things. Then we don't see the consequences immediately, but later on we may, then it may be too late to correct them even. So that's a problem with us. So, of course, if it is done in a proper way, very good, but do we have that knowledge, proper knowledge to do things properly, to create good effects? That's the question. So probably we don't at the moment. We are experimenting to do things, and of course these can be manipulated in the wrong way. So we know that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So that is why a lot of the Vedic knowledge was secret and not given to everybody, because if you give it to the demons, they'll misuse it and use it for all their bad motives or whatever. So don't give it to them at all. If it's given to a proper person, yes, it can be used properly, but if it's given to the wrong person, no. So that's where we're at in the modern world. We can use these genetic things positively. If we're very, very careful, maybe we could also use it in a very bad way. For, you know, very bad purposes as well. There's always the opportunity to do that. So that's what we have to be very, very careful. And we can never say that everybody has good intentions and they're beyond, you know, using these things for the wrong purposes. We've seen in the past they've been doing that. So and it's happened in the past, so it can happen in the future also. Okay, Hare Krishna.